Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 8th of December, we have Alan Greenberg, Michaeli Nylon, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Mike O'Connor, Shiva Mutasami, Elaine Doolin, Dave Kisunduyo, Mason Cole, Paul Diaz, Ron Wickersham, Barry Cobb, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Ted Suzuki, Helen Laverty. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from James Bladell, Tatiana Kramsova, and William McKellicott. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names, there are quite a few people on the call this evening, for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. I think today the main topic of discussion will be an update on what's happening with the registrar survey from Marika and anything else that we have if we have any time left over. Marika, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Alan. So this is Marika. I took you already through the preliminary results of the registrar survey two weeks ago based on confirmed feedback from four registrars and additional information I had found through web research. In the meantime, I've received information from two additional registrars, and I'm still waiting for confirmation on some of the information I found from three registrars. So I still don't have the final results. I'm really hoping that by next week I'll have the final results. I've been chasing the different people, and they've promised to try to get this information to me as soon as possible. So what I've done is I've taken the presentation of 2 weeks ago and basically just updated the information for those issues where I've now confirmed information or where status has changed, and for some of the questions that weren't included in the previous update, as I only had feedback from four registrars and didn't feel there was sufficient to make an assessment on what the actual practice was. So those are included here now. So my proposal would be just to run through and actually focus on the changes, which are highlighted in red, so should hopefully be easy to follow. Anyone that wasn't there 2 weeks ago, I'm happy as well if there are any specific questions on the other information to address those as well. So is everyone happy?
Sounds fine. Sounds fine with me, Marika, it's Alan.
Okay. So then looking at the background, nothing has changed there. I'll know the objective is to get more information on registrar practices. So just looking at initial findings, I now have complete findings for six registrars from the top 10, and I'm still waiting for feedback for the remaining three. Just to clarify, we're talking about the top 10, but two of those are from the same parent company as such, and the practices are the same. So actually what we're going to have is a top nine as such. Covered in this survey. So on question one, nothing has changed there. No new information that came up. I think most of this information already confirmed through the information provided in registration agreements or other documents, and no one told me that it was incorrect what I found there. So on question 1A, one addition here. One registrar in the registration agreement indicated that they do not provide the option for auto-renewal, but in the feedback received, they indicated that many of their resellers do provide this feature. There's just some additional information on that specific point.
Marika, that would imply that we really don't have any way of identifying sort of what percentage of people do that, since it's one removed and we have no direct information from that. Is that correct?
I think that's correct. And so on question two, or 1B, when and how notices are sent, I noticed in the last meeting that two registrars have in the registration agreement a clause or a reference saying as a convenience to the registrant and not as a binding commitment, the registrar may notify the RAE. But it does seem that in practice, these registrars do send notices to their customers. So I think it's something to see as well in some of the other provisions and as well later down in my conclusion. What sometimes seems to happen that certain provisions are I guess, put into the registration agreements as this kind of general clause or, you know, in case of, but that the practice actually turns out to be different from what the registration agreement might imply. So that's one of the areas that the group might want to talk about.
Marika, any questions from anyone else? I don't see any hands. To what extent do you feel comfortable talking about the when? You say some do provide detailed calendars, others don't. Have you gotten any more feedback, even when there's no formal statement as to when these notices are sent?
Yes, I think that's the next question.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Let me just check. Oh, wait, did I take that one out? Yes, I do have, and actually didn't include it here, but it's in the spreadsheet. Many do provide exact information on, at least in the communication to me, I wasn't always able to find it in the information I was able to find online. But some provide very detailed, like as one saying, notices are sent 90 days, 60 days, 30 days, 15 days, 7 days, and 1 day prior to expiration. I'd say up to 12 days, we start sending notices. Others start 75 days prior to expiration and approximately 20 days after. Here's another one that starts 45 days prior to expiration and has as well as set on the 1st, 11th, and 21st of the month following expiration. So several of them have provided detailed information as to when, at what point in time, they're actually sending those notices. And here's another one saying that they start already 90 days prior to expiration. So that's, I mean, once the spreadsheet, I think, is completed and I've cleaned it up and taken out all the identifiers and mixed them up, I can share that with the group so everyone can see as well the more detailed information on all these questions. As here I've just tried to, you know, pick out the highlights.
Sure, I understand.
So then moving on to 1C, based on the feedback received, it turns out that 6 registrars confirmed that notices are also sent following expiration and not only prior to expiration.
But 6 is all you have confirmation from untotaled. So does that mean all so far?
No, because there's still 3 that I'm waiting feedback on. So indeed, all of those that have provided feedback have confirmed that they also send notices.
I thought I recalled that one of the 4 in the first one you shared with us said they do not provide notices afterwards.
No, yeah, actually, you're correct. There's actually, in the 6, there is one that where I found that information in either the registration agreement or the other information provided on the website. So unless they confirm to me now that information is wrong, you know, this number will go down. But the 6 is based on those that have confirmed, and I think it might be as well 1 or 2 cases where I actually found that information as part of the registration agreement, but I haven't got a confirmation from the registrar, but I'm assuming that kind of information is hopefully accurate.
Okay.
So indeed, you're correct, and one registrar doesn't confirm that they do not send notices following expiration, but their user account does contain an alert. So question 1D. One change here, and this is what I referred to before, in one of the registration agreements, there was also the provision that WHOIS records may change, but following the feedback from the registrar, it actually seems that they do not make any actual substantial changes. So they have the provision that they are able to do that, but in practice they don't.
Okay, but that implies for those registrars, and I think that's most of them, that redirect the domain name at some point to a website of their own, that implies that the WHOIS is not reflecting who's actually managing that website. I mean, I understand changing WHOIS information is a two-edged sword, but I want to make sure we're understanding properly. So they are in some cases redirecting the website, but the WHOIS does not change in terms of who the owner is.
I think that's correct.
Okay. Michele?
I don't see how that's relevant. I mean, if you're redirecting a website, that's a DNS change. I don't see what WHOIS has got to do with it.
I was just trying to make sure I understood, because the issue has been raised in terms of, I think it was raised originally by Christina, in terms of UDRP, where the website indicates some potential infringing activity, but the whois says X owns it. And so I was just trying to make sure I understood what the situation was.
Right.
Okay, so let's keep going. Yep.
Okay, so continuing on, so based on the information received, three registrars confirm that they do not make any substantial changes to whois apart from changing the name servers. Question 1E, just one change here, that instead of four, it's now five registrars that indicate that the REA may recover the domain name at least for a certain period for the normal renewal fee.
Can you stay there for a moment?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, sorry, I just hadn't read it completely.
So 1F, when is the DNS changed and where does it point? Here again, this is I thought it was a very unusual provision that was included in one of the registration agreements, which was talking about intercepting communication requests and monetizing such requests at its sole discretion. Based on the feedback received, it seems that they just, you know, change the DNS and point it to a part page. And again, I think it's one of those provisions where maybe they, you know, try to cover anything that might possibly happen. But, you know, from the feedback received, I didn't see any clear indication that they're, you know, actively intercepting communication requests or doing stuff with that. So.
Well, but doesn't the term communication request include web requests?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, but I could imagine for the average response, it's, you know, it might be confusing. Communication requests for me could be as well emails or...
I'd hate to think that monetize such requests is referring to emails.
Yes.
Jeff, you have a comment?
Yeah, actually, Alan, that was exactly my point, is I think that remember that in a technical point of view, you're requesting a site, so I'm not going to make that assumption, but I am almost positive that a communication request is the request for the website, is the web request, not, you know, a phone call saying, hey, we're going to upsell you now on some sort of beauty product when you make a call to us or something else. I have a feeling it's a web request.
Well, and the concept of monetizing requests, which include email, moves from the sleazy to the illegal, I think.
Yes, yeah, so that's why I have a feeling that it's probably an old-school term that was in there. That's what the communication request is.
I think actually it's a technical term, but... No other comments? Okay, Marika.
So moving on to 1G, does the page say it has expired? From the feedback received, now six instead of five registrars that indicate that the new page will display information on the fact that the registration has expired or how it can be renewed, or it might advertise the sale or auction of the domain name registration. So 1H wasn't included in the previous version of the results. So what happens to email following expiration? And basically, I think all the feedback received so far indicates that email will bounce and it's discarded. Although some pointed out, like, unless the DNS is hosted with the registrar and only the A record is changed, then the registrar might still receive his or her email.
I'm wondering, from any of the registrars who are on this call, to what extent, if you are hosting the DNS, do you only change the A record, or do you change the entire DNS entry? Anyone wants to volunteer that information?
This is Marika. I think actually in the feedback received, that specific registrar indicated that, you know, if the DNS is hosted with the registrar name service, only the A record is changed.
Okay, so mail, so in that particular case, things like mail will keep on resolving.
Yes, and that was feedback from one registrar.
If there's an MX record, yeah.
Yes, I don't know if that's the same for other registrars, and I don't know if anyone would like to comment on that. So.
Okay, so it just does mean there may be mixed types of signs when this happens. Okay, let's keep going.
Moving on to 1I, if the registrant email address is using the domain name, is this factored in the communications with RE? And so far, all have confirmed that this is not factored in for those that are sending post-expiration notices.
Have you been asking who the notices get sent to, which of the contact addresses? Has that come up in any of the discussions?
Yes, many of them have provided that information, and you know, most of them indicate that they basically send it to, you know, all the contacts they have on record. So,
okay.
You know, the registrant, the billing contact, the technical contact, many indicate that they, you know, approach several, you know, if they have more email addresses on file, they will try to use that.
Okay, thank you.
And 1J, our reminder sent from the same address as other communication. Some noted here as well that in cases where a reseller is involved, it might differ as it's up to the reseller to configure. It's again a case where it's difficult to assess what might happen there. Four registrars confirmed that all communications come from the same address as all the other communications that they have with the registrant. And one registrar noted that they use different from addresses to actually identify the type of communication intended for the registrant. So it might be, you know, renewal at registrar.com or, you know, new offer at, I don't know. So.
One of the questions we didn't ask, and it dawns on me now, perhaps we should have, is the address that they're sent from an address where a reply can be made to? Or are they addresses where they say do not reply, you know, mail replies are not handled? Not sure we can do anything about it now, but it's interesting. We should have thought of that.
Alan, can I jump in?
Sure.
In a second? It's Jeff at Castell.
Yeah.
I just want to – so your question is saying if I'm sending an email – sorry, this is for a renewal email. You're asking if the email address has a do not reply email address. Is that what you're asking? I'm just trying to clarify.
Yeah.
So – I'm not, you know, just in the sense, I just, as a regular, I'm just going to comment overall on a business practice that if it did have that I would assume that somebody would put in a contact information because it would kind of be not too useful just to the general business to send out a renewal notice and then, or some sort of update and then have no contact, way to contact back to the registrar or to the person to actually affect that renewal. That's just a comment on general business
practices. I can't argue with that, but one quite often sees in, you know, I can't talk about these particular ones. One often sees things where there's a way, you know, a place to click to go to a website, and you cannot actually respond to that email. So whether it's
but there's
a
one
particular
or the
situation
other.
Or not, I don't know. Yeah.
But there's one or the other. It wouldn't be almost like a notice without any sort of action items on it. That's a general business comment. I'd just like to.
I wish all businesses followed that scrupulously. I just had one the other day where you could not reply and the URL and the email didn't work, but not a registrar.
Bad QA.
someone was actually trying to sell me something, actually. Indeed, yes. Marika, go ahead.
So moving on to 1K, at what point is the domain name registration made available to others following expiration? You have just changed some to several specify that, again, this is a case where, according to the registration agreement, in theory, the registrar could renew or transfer the registration to the registrar immediately upon expiration, but several indicate that in practice this only happens at the end of the auto-renew grace period that's offered to the registrants.
Okay.
Then 1L, relating to when a reseller is involved, how does the RAE determine if he or she is dealing with a reseller? most indicate that reseller information shows up in the WHOIS database, and that normally the reseller serves as the first point of contact of the REE. One registrar noted as well that the absence of the ICANN accredited logo on the website should be an indication, and as well, I think one registrar or two even indicated that they also provide a reseller information retrieval tool on their own website. So another sub-question of this question is, how does the RE identify the affiliated registrar? And again, most noted here that this information is also available through a WHOIS lookup. Another sub-question related to this is, may the RE work with the registrar to recover the name following expiration? And most noted here that the registrar is the preferred first point of contact, but in the case of escalation, such as unresponsiveness of the reseller, the registrar will assess, will assist the REE in recovering his or her domain name.
Okay.
So 1M, what options are available for contacting the reseller or registrar? And most noted here that all communication means that they have available prior to expiration, such as web, email, telephone. I think somebody even noted that people can as well come to the physical offices to do their business there are also available after expiration. I don't think anyone noted that there's anything different available to someone post-expiration that's not available prior to expiration.
Marika, have you been able to identify for each of your 10 cases whether they all use all three modes or are they select or did you just sort of group them all together and they say it's the same? In other words, have you verified that, for instance, telephone contact is available in all cases?
I'm just quickly looking through this, and I think at least four or five specifically specify that phone support is available. For three, I'm still waiting for feedback. And some just say communication options remain the same as pre-expiration.
Okay.
I think that's for two. I see that quickly. So some modes do specify that telephone support is available.
Okay.
So in 1N, when does name enter RGP? Nothing has changed here. This is in most cases, and also those that provide feedback confirm that this normally only happens if the registration has not been renewed by the REE or transferred to a third party. No change either. Duration of the auto renewal grace period offered to registrants ranges from 0 to 30, 35, 40, 42 days. Question two, what if explicit instructions are given to not to renew registration? No change here either. So most registrars follow the same procedure as for no notice given.
Marika, could you go back to the previous one? The one on the number of days grace, number of days period.
Yeah.
My recollection is the contracts often said could be as little as zero. But not many registrars said that is the practice. That's correct. So only one said zero, and
yes,
the other said numbers ranging from 30 to 42.
Yes, that's correct. And
okay.
For the one that where it is zero, it's partly specific case as well, because there the automatic setting is auto renewal, and you really have to go through a bit of hassle to undo that option.
Okay.
And then move straight into RGP.
Okay. Ron?
Hello?
Yes, Ron.
Yes, Ron Wickersham. This is auto-renewal period provided by the registrar, but isn't that the registry in this case that we're talking about? The registrar's auto-renewal is that confusing thing where they may have a credit card on hold or on file and try to auto-renew by the credit card. So we've got the auto-renewal meaning two things.
Yes, I think my understanding is in this case, Marika can correct me, that auto-renewal means the auto-renewal between the registrar and the registrant. not correct. The auto-renewal grace period with the registry. Marika, is that the correct interpretation?
Yes, that's correct.
So, yeah, yes, it is that there is either money or a credit card deposited with the registrar or some sort of terms which allow the registrar to presume they will be paid.
But I'm confused how you would have 30 days what is 30 days auto-renewal if it's auto-renewed immediately by the credit card? Is this prior to expiration? It's not, isn't it? This is after expiration, so...
Rick, I think he's right. I think we're combining two things in this one slide.
Yeah, the most registrars refer to this as well, and registrar-provided auto-renew grace period, or they have different names for it. But you're right, you have auto-renewal, which takes place prior to expiration, and you have as well an auto-renew grace period. It should be auto-renewal grace period. It's probably a more appropriate term, but I think
well,
it didn't fit on the...
Auto-renewal grace period is a registrar-registry defined term, so we should probably use something else. The second bullet really is talking about the grace period or the period of when a name can be recovered even though it has technically expired. So it's the renewal grace period between the registrar or registrant, a period which officially has no name right now. Is that correct?
That's correct. And,
yeah.
And different names are used by registrars for some. I'm just looking here. Some call it renewal grace period. I think it's some call it the reactivation period, grace period, auto renewal grace period. So it's a bit of a mix. But indeed, I agree. Confusing term.
The auto-renewal should always happen prior to the actual expiration unless there's a credit card problem, in which case it may be delayed a bit. The true auto-renewal, where the money is on deposit in one form or another.
The way to clarify this is basically taking out the auto and just call it the renewal grace period between registrar and registrants.
Yeah, but the okay. Got it. Okay, the zero came in with auto-renewal to explain why they did zero, but it wasn't really in reference to the screen, I guess. I think I now know why we got confused.
Okay.
But we do need to be careful about terms like auto-renew, which has two different meanings depending on which two parties you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I have this philosophy that in ICANN you must have at least two different definitions of the same word just to keep everyone on their toes.
So moving on then to question 2A, how is request for deletion prior to expiration dealt with? Sort of four, now five registrars indicate that registration is immediately deleted upon request.
So we had a question at one point of does the registrar allow someone to opt out of the transfer resell or, you know, auction process at the end of a registration? It sounds like, according to this, if I were to request that the registrar delete my name a week before the end of the period, that implicitly would opt out of the auction process and go directly to delete. Am I reading that properly?
I think that's correct. That's at least how I understood the feedback received. There's only one registrar that actually indicates that it will go through the normal...
expired process.
Expired process.
Okay, that's interesting.
Question three, I just added a point here about, you know, what I just noted, that sometimes the language in registration agreements actually doesn't seem to match the actual practice, which can be confusing and, you know, might lead people to draw certain conclusions that actually don't turn to be correct based on, you know, the practice used by a registrar.
Presumably in all cases where you found that, the agreement is more onerous than the actual practice.
Yes, correct. But as well, like sometimes it's basically providing all kinds of, the registrar may do this, which might lead you to draw a conclusion that they are doing that, which then turns out, I mean, it's not the actual practice. So question four, if a registrar makes changes to the whois, does it depend on the registry's charging or not? And all respondents so far indicated that this does not have any impact on that. Question five, is there a right for the REE to remove the domain name from auction or sale? Three cases specified that the REE can remove the domain name from the auction or sale if they just renew the registration. And one registrar confirmed that if the REE has notified the registrar that he or she does not want to proceed with a transfer to a third party, the domain name will be deleted. And I'm still waiting for feedback from the other registrars.
Okay.
On the question six of how many registrants have actually used their right to recover a domain name from sale or auction, all of those that have provided feedback have indicated that there's no data available for registrars or for registrants that have responded to that have to make use of that right.
Once the domain name reaches that sale auction stage, what does it cost the registrant to stop the auction? Can he renew at the usual price or a slightly increased price, or does he end up paying what the registrar demands from the registrant?
We didn't specifically ask that question. There is some information in the survey on whether the costs of recovery after expiration but before RGP is different than normal auto renewal, and if so, you know, is it based on something? And I think most of the feedback there is that in some cases, there's most of the time, in a certain period where the normal renewal fee applies. But I think, if I recall correctly, and that's something I would need to look up further, that in most cases, once it moves beyond that certain point, in most cases, a specific recovery fee is charged, which I don't know whether that's the set amount or depends, where the domain name is in the process. And I don't know if any of the registrars want to comment on that, but that's maybe one of the questions, if people feel that will help to inform the discussions that we might want to go back on or try to find some further details on.
Any registrars have any comments on that? Appears not.
I think it's quite possible that a registrar, once it reaches that auction stage, could tell the registrant that this domain will fetch $50,000 in an auction. So if you want to renew now, you pay me $25,000 or something.
It certainly could. The question is it happening, and to what extent do we want to regulate it if it is? There's nothing in the contract that in most of the registrant agreements that preclude that happening, but that doesn't necessarily say it is happening.
Okay.
I mean, this is Marika, just quickly looking at the feedback received so far. Most just indicate that, you know, they can renew it. That might be applicable to the normal renewal and redemption fees. From the feedback I've received so far, no one seems to indicate that the REE can recover the domain name by matching, you know, whatever price was offered at an auction. But again, I don't have all the information here, but this is just based on the information I've received so far.
There's been a discussion going on chat, which I wasn't paying attention to, between Siva and Helen. Helen, do you have any comments you want to make specifically? I haven't read all of the comments that seem to have flowed on.
Not really. I was just clarifying when the registrar auto-renews a domain without making a fuss about expiry. I think all registrars do need to make a fuss about expiry because it's not the registrar that auto-renews. It's the registry, and the registry is fine because they get the money off the registrar. So the registrar has to do something or they lose the fund.
Any other comments at this point? Marika, back to you, and I think... Oh, 1 second, Michele. The second one. Second Michele.
Yeah, sorry, my internet connection is being very flaky this evening. Not sure if my router or my DSL line. No, I think there's a bit of confusion for... Sorry, I can't fully pronounce his name. With regard to this entire auto-renewal and everything else. I mean, what Helen was trying to explain is that there's two sides to it. If the registrant has a credit card or other payment method associated with their registrar account, then any auto-renewal is a full renewal, a normal renewal, and there's no discussion or debate or problem with it. What Helen is talking about is where the registry automatically renews the domain, charges the registrar, and the registrar has to tell the registry to delete the domain if they want to get that money back, because at that point they still haven't been paid by the registrant. I think that might have been causing some confusion for somebody.
Yeah, as I think we talked about earlier, we certainly are going to have to be careful in any documents we do about the term auto-renew and differentiate between the auto-renew which may happen under contract between registrant, registrar, and the one which happens automatically with some registries, and because they are two different transactions with different sets of rules on them.
I mean, just as a point of clarification, I mean, say, for example, with .eu, I think what some registrars have to do is that they actually send two commands at the time of registration. I mean, one command is to register the domain, the other command is to delete the domain. So actually, at the time of registration, you're actually creating the domain and then sending a command to remove the domain a year later. Because if you don't do that, you'll get billed for the domain automatically. So obviously, then if the registrant renews the domain, you then cancel your deletion command. Because I mean, ultimately, from the registrar side, we have to keep funds with all the registries because they're all prepaid. So if I had a registrant who registered because, I don't know, they were bored or something, they registered a couple of thousand domain names, and I accidentally renewed those couple of thousand domain names without receiving payment, and then they decided they didn't want them, I'd be out of pocket for a couple of thousand times the registration fees.
If you didn't cancel them.
You
may be out of pocket in the interim 45 days if indeed you have deposited funds as opposed to a letter of credit, but yes.
Yeah. Well,
the money is owed, whether it's moved or not, depends on the individual agreement.
Actually, that's not exactly right.
Say that again?
Okay.
That's not exactly right now, Alan, in that with the anti-tasty measures put in place, everything beyond 10% of a registrar's net adds will now be billed both the registration fee as well as the transaction fee.
But that's net adds. That doesn't count for renewals, I don't believe. That's not the auto renewals.
No, it's
that category.
It's deletes. In other words, your deletes beyond the 10% of net adds. So basically, if you registered 100 names in a month and you deleted 50 of them, right? Your 10% threshold becomes 5, your net adds. That 5 is applied against the 50 deletes you have, so 45 deletes the registrar would be on the hook paying the full reg fee and transaction fee for.
Yeah, certainly if you're winding down your business, that may come and hit you.
Yeah, but it is a hit because reaching the 10% threshold in the relatively low volume TLDs, you can reach those numbers quickly where you are paying the full fees, so you will take a hit fairly quickly, to use Michele's example.
Well, okay. It's a subject for a different conversation than this one, but
sure. Just want to make sure that it's understood.
If indeed the anti-tasting rules are hitting you if you have an unusually large number of domains which are simply being phased out by the registrant and you don't reuse them, then that's a byproduct which wasn't intended and perhaps needs to be looked at.
Sure. And a unique case. Agreed, Alan. I just want to make it clear that fees can kick in fairly quickly.
And the other thing as well is that, I mean, letters of credit and all that kind of thing might work for an American registrar, but it might wouldn't. But for example, with our bank trying to talk to an American registrar, it's not registry, it probably wouldn't work too well. I mean, the American banks versus European banks, the conversations are quite tortuous.
For reasons I won't go into, I can relate to that.
This is Marika. I just have a question on the comment that Paul just made, and I'm not 100% sure, but doesn't the delete specifically relate to deletes during AGP?
Yes, Marika, but not to carry us far from a field. Once you start getting anywhere near that 10% metric, and for every registrar, obviously it's a moving target, it's a different number, but for smaller registrar, or again, in those TLDs that have relatively low volumes, those extra costs can kick in fairly quickly.
Yeah, but it should have nothing to do with the deletes associated with an expiring name that had been auto-renewed and then deleted.
If the name was auto-renewed and then you're telling the registry, even within the 5 days, there's the ICANN rule is looking at your total volume of deletes, and it's agnostic about whether it's within the 5 days or something longer. Does that make sense? The key is for registries that auto-renew, any of the deletes that take place thereafter are going to account under the anti-tasting rule.
We need to take this offline.
Right.
It doesn't sound like that was an intended product of this, and if it is, perhaps it needs to be discussed separately.
Yeah, Alan, it's Jeff. I just want to say that's the law. Of unintended consequences.
Indeed.
delete to the registry. A delete command is a delete command. There's no differentiation. So, yeah, there's a lot of unintended consequences from tasting and anti-tasting, and this is probably one of them.
My recollection of the rule is deletes of a domain name during its add grace period was what was specified. That may not have been an implementation. But again, off topic for this thing, but of some not so minor interest to me if indeed it's happening, so let's carry the discussion offline. Any other questions before we go back to the questions?
We're actually at the end of the presentation.
Yes, I figured that out. We find ourselves with significantly more time than I thought we were going to have. Anyone have any particular comments about the survey itself before we perhaps change direction just a little bit?
Yeah, it's Jeff Eckhouse. I have one question, Alan, if you don't mind. What's the next step, I guess, with the survey? Maybe I missed something, so I apologize. Are we going to go to a broader group, how is this going to be folded into the next steps? If you could you or Marika sort of explain how the survey, what it's going to be used or synthesized in any way, or is it just for informational purposes, if you could sort of help out with that?
Well, in fact, that's what I was going to go to as the next question. My understanding from Marika is, of what Marika, what you said at the beginning of it, is once you have reasonably complete answers from all 10 registrars, you will anonymize it to the extent practical and present us with a matrix similar to what we saw before Seoul, that is, with the four, what was then four columns and is now 10, to try to get a feel for the details involved. Do I read that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
And I think we then need to try to draw some conclusions. I mean, there's you know, the obvious conclusion that there's a lot of options, there's a lot of variation, but I think we need to draw some conclusions on what general practices are and how much variation there is, and to what extent can a registrant be expected to understand this. So I would think that would be the next step once we have the full details. And based on that, I think we have the requirement is to go back to the original questions within the charter and try to do a level set of where do we believe we are based on what we have that are now considered a fact that we did at the beginning of this whole process. Ron, you have a comment?
Yes, this is back to one of the questions in the survey, but for contacting during an expire period, saying that it's the same as before doesn't really answer what that is. So, excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Can we find out if people are able to use the telephone or email in addition to the web? Because I believe in one case a few years ago when I tried to help someone, the reseller in that case would not accept telephone or email. So it was a very difficult issue since the person who had the domain name didn't know their password. So establishing your credential during an expiration period can be difficult if those other services are not offered. And should it be within our recommendations for any changes that those kind of expiration support should be mandated?
Marika, do you want to address that?
Yes, no, I
just
have
your hand up.
Yes, this is Marika. So I just wanted to mention that for several registrars, they do provide more detailed information on how registrants can contact them following expiration, but some do note as well that it depends on the reseller. So the detail of the information you're looking for indeed might not come up in the response to the survey, but I don't really know how we could get those because it would mean that we would have to approach resellers and ask them about how they do things. And I guess I might go beyond the survey as it currently stands.
Ron, to answer the question you asked of is it within our purview to comment on this kind of thing, I think the answer is yes, because one of the questions in the charter is there adequate opportunity for a registrant to renew a name after expiration? If the only way you can get in is by typing in a password which you don't have, that sort of is not a really great opportunity. So I think it's certainly within our purview. What we do with it is a different matter. But I can't see how it could be interpreted as outside of our purview.
Okay, thank you.
Now that I've said that, I'm sure someone will disagree, I hope, just to get some good conversation going. No? Okay. Okay, the question raised was, going back one, is what do we do next? So I think, well, I may have already said it now. I think once we have the details and an understanding of what the general concepts are, we need to go back and try to answer the questions within the charter and then come to a decision on what we do next. I mean, we can pack up our bags and say we're finished, there's no problem. Or we can decide that at least in some of the aspects we need to make some recommendations, whether it's for best practices or policy change, to ensure that if we perceive there are potential problems now that they be addressed. I won't try to predict what the direction is, but I think that's the general direction we have to head in.
May I say something?
Yeah. Siva, yes, you can talk.
Yes, and so far we have gone by the data that was provided by the registrar and by the constituencies like commercial and business constituency or registrar constituency and so on. Can we go and contact users who deal with resellers and who are possibly facing problems and get an assessment of, make an assessment of what kind of problems that they are facing from a user's perspective? That could be one of the next steps.
Well, we have been asking questions since we formed this working group. We've put out a number of calls to people saying, if you can give us specifics on the kinds of problems that are being faced by registrants, then we would like to hear them. We haven't gotten many answers like that, but certainly to the extent that we can that we can get people to give us some actual data and to the detail, you know, with details if possible, so we can try to track them down, the better we are in trying to address them. One of the problems we faced is we're dealing with situations where we have moderately literal hard data on the problems that have been experienced by people. So to the extent we can get them, yes, certainly. I noticed you've had a number of comments on the chat. Are there any other issues you want to bring up? And Michele will be next.
No, nothing at the moment.
Okay, Michele?
I'm just echoing what you're saying, Alan. I mean, you know, with public comment periods, the public comment periods, if it wasn't publicized enough, it's not our fault. I mean, ultimately, you know, there seems to be this wonderful, oh, there's a problem. But when people were asked to provide tangible examples of problems, there was very little forthcoming. So, you know, unless people actually are willing to say, right, this is the problem that I had, these are the specifics of the problem, I don't see how we can kind of second guess things. I mean, we can invent problems, but I don't think that's going to help anybody. I mean, the thing about talking about resellers, again, we discussed this at length. I mean, the ICANN can, at present, under the current contracts, can state what registrars can and cannot do and can enforce that. Enforcing things that we don't even know about is impossible. I mean, we need tangible examples of people having tangible issues that can be dealt with, as opposed to, you know, there is supposedly a problem, but we need to know exactly what the problem is.
Well, that is certainly part of the issue, and I agree. We do need, and it, you know, there are a number of people, including myself, on this call, who have said they have been involved in a number of cases, and I think to the extent that we can, you know, factoring in privacy issues, we need to try to document what the syndromes are of these kind of things. And I think that's something we need to try to do on a much more active level. I'm not sure I know how to succeed. The other issue is one that Mike Pelage has raised a number of times, of making sure that we're in a situation where the terms that are presented to registrants are understandable and consistent where they need to be consistent, and certainly put out with enough clarity that we can expect people to understand it. And that we can talk about in the absence of hard, nefarious actions on behalf of registrars. So, but then, and that's a different issue, but I think one that we can still address even without the hard data. But there are enough anecdotal statements of people saying that they are familiar with problems that I think we need to try to document them. It may still only be anecdotal evidence, but it's, you know, if we can get enough of them, then we have some idea of where we need to go. At least that's my take on it. It's something we haven't been successful in doing, and we need to if we're going to come up with some usable output out of this process. Any other questions, comments?
mean, one thing we have discussed in the past, Alan, is in relation to who is. And, I mean, some stuff there that, you know, the registries are in a position to possibly affect some change, but they seem to think it's a golden cow, they can't touch it. From my own personal perspective, I don't have a problem with things being communicated clearly to people, but there's only so much that the registrars can do. The other thing as well is that it comes back again to the same topic that we've discussed ad nauseum, there's only so much that the registrars can do to assist the registrants. So, I mean, for example, if people aren't accepting phone calls, if the reseller isn't accepting the phone call in a renewal period, then why didn't the registrant go to the registrar? So I'm sure most of the registrars are going to take phone calls. I know we do, and I imagine that any of the other registrars who are on this call do as well.
I think a lot of it comes down to, for a moderately novice user, and certainly the ones that have been referred to me, and I suspect to some of the other people, these people are quite innocent and don't really know the intricacies. It may not be trivial from their point of view to even find out who the registrar is. It's not that it's not posted in clear sight. It just may not be obvious to someone going to a reseller website of who do you contact next if this person hasn't been responsive. So I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but I think that's part of the problem. Is a lot of this is a black box to the people who are using it. You know, especially if we're talking about people who are using it at a level of buying a website that comes packaged with a domain name. So there's just an awful lot of mystery in it for many of the people involved in the process. And I think that's part of the answer. We may or may not be able to address that, but I think that's part of the reason why there's, you know, people pull their hair out and don't know what to do. I don't know if I've addressed the issue you raised. It's certainly something that we need to try to understand, because at the end of the day, we need to decide whether we do nothing and the world is running as it should, or what do we try to do to make it run better. Any other thoughts on how we go forward? Other than someone's GSM phone. Well, in the absence of any more discussion at this point, I'm happy to call the meeting to a close a little bit early. I hope that next week we will be in a position to have more substantive discussion on both the registrar survey, if it's completed, and I'm optimistic that one of the other proposals I mentioned earlier, we may actually have something by then. Any other thoughts before we close today? Silence. I take that as agreement. Thank you for your contributions, and we'll see you in a week.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks.
That concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your attendance. You may disconnect at this time.
Bye, everyone. Bye.